With bad and worse options, how should Christians think about voting in this climate? Now, this is being asked by a lot of different Christian publications. They're all weighing in on this issue. And I got to say, most of them got it wrong, in my opinion. And I'll tell you why I think that. I think they got it wrong because I think it depends on what you think about Christ. If you are a Christian, what do you think about Christ? Do you trust him with the consequences if you do the right thing? Or are you kind of getting tired of, this and you want to take care of it yourself? And you got a better idea, you know? I think that I can fix it. So let's just forget about the principles. And if these people betray principles, we'll just say they're playing 4D chess or something like that. We can just move it along that way, right? You know, I think we had a lot of people. Jason Barker always comes to mind. He wrote me a long letter. I haven't passed on yet to you. But talking about the different things that happened as he was facing being kicked out of the military because he wasn't going to take the jab, and how ultimately God worked this out for him. And I've had people tell me that over and over again, through emails, through letters. I've had people that I've met personally who have told me that. And none of them have any regret. They went through a difficult time, but they look at what has happened to some of the people who were browbeat into doing this and were injured or killed. And in many cases, people were came out of this on the other side blessed way more than they were before that. The insurance agent that we have, he had a job that he was making over $300,000 a year. And his parents thought he was absolutely crazy to get out of it because he was not going to take the jab. And like, you take the jab or you leave. So he said, I'm leaving. And he set up his own insurance company as an agent, right? He's an insurance agent. He's not an insurance company. But, it was an agency that he was working for. It was very big, paying him a big salary. And he just started working for himself, and he's making more money now than he did before. So what do we do about the election? And so this one person says, so do we just sit it out? Do we punish the GOP for its spinelessness and watch the Democrats dance on the ashes of our liberties and our country and our family? See, this is the false dichotomy that they always give you. This is Hegelian thinking. And they put you in this box. They tell you that you've only got two choices, and you believe them. These are the same people who demand to define the terms that we refer to everything as, right? These are the people who say, no, you're not pro-life. You're anti-abortion rights. Oh, okay. You're now going to be the red team, when red always was a communist. So the communists now are, in America, are going to wear blue, and you're going to wear red caps and call yourself red states and all the rest of this stuff. Oh, okay. Okay. And you've only got two choices. The only thing you can do to keep you can either sit there and contemplate your navel and do absolutely nothing, or you can hold your nose and vote for Trump, or else the Democrats are going to control the country. Well, that's a lie. That's a lie. Those are not your options. Don't let them put you in that box. See, the purpose of the election, and what these people don't understand, is that the election is to distract you from the things that you can do that really would make a difference. They don't want you doing those things. They want you focused on the fantasy. They want you focused on the pageant. They want you focused on the presidency. This is the talking about Lala Harris. This person goes on to say, this is the same woman who, with a straight face, claims to stand for justice while championing policies that butcher the unborn and muzzle dissent. Okay, well, this is a woman who we all know, that's what she is. She comes at you straight away. And flying her flag, wearing her Maoist costume, and wearing her Maoist policies all over her like a NASCAR driver and his corporate sponsors. Or you can have the guy who is incognito and subtle, secret, covert. He does gun things like gun control for executive by executive order, and he does it with something that nobody cares about, bump stock. So he can establish a precedent to do gun control by executive order. Then he moves to the pistol brace. Then he pulls it off when somebody, when the NRA finally complains about it. And then Biden puts it in. But of course, when he did it with a bump stock, Lala said, well, I'll do that myself. There's other ways to fight that. We had people who fought the pistol brace at the state level. We had people who removed the bump stock at the Supreme Court. See, I happen to think that's more dangerous to have somebody who is sneaky and subtle and covert and lying to your face. I think that's more dangerous. Quite frankly, I think it's more satanic, right? Satan was the most subtle of them all, right? I'm talking about the joy of living in a country where you can still proclaim the gospel freely, says this person. Yeah, you've got to vote for Trump so this will happen. Well, I don't know that Trump would defend that. So many things that you would think that he would have defended as a relabeled New York Democrat who now calls himself a Republican, but I don't know that he would make a difference with any of that stuff. But you could. If you paid any attention to what was happening in 2020, you know that all politics is local. You can make a difference with that. He says, here's a hard truth. Our vote is not just a political action. It's a moral one. Now I agree with him. So it's about who you trust, isn't it? That's the real moral thing. It's not about which policies you agree with or whatever else. It's who do you trust? Are you going to trust Christ? Are you going to say, I know? And he does. He goes through all this stuff. He goes, yeah, I know that Trump's bad and his policies have been bad. But she's even worse. Well, you know what's right and wrong. And you can either do what's wrong or you can do what's right and leave the consequences to God. As I said before when I was talking about homeschooling, isn't it amazing that God has kept that door open with everything else that's going on? He's left that door open for you to raise your family, for you to protect your children, for you to train them up in the way they should go. But, you know, we've got to have Trump to do that, right? No. No, you got to do it yourself. The important stuff, you have to do. And if you abdicate that, it's really a question of who do you trust, and who you trust is who you're looking to as your savior. It's just that simple. You have to do what is right. As I said before, when we talk about people who had religious objections to the vaccines, or even if they had a medical objection to the vaccine or a constitutional objection to the vaccine, do the right thing. Leave the consequences up to God. And yet, I'm seeing this one place after the other. Here is a guy who is talking about, this is was put out by Gateway Pundit, Trump supporters, says this is a must watch. A popular Christian YouTuber. Okay. I'm sure that, go back and look. I wonder what this guy was saying during the vaccine stuff, right? He's got a real large following on YouTube. I don't know. But anyway, his name is Alan Parr, and he drops powerful video explaining why every believer should vote for Trump and Republican candidates. What does it mean to believe? You know, it's really about trust, right? Who do you trust? Who do you trust to take care of you? Well, you'll find out if you put your trust in a politician. Here's what he has to say, though. He doesn't think that character really matters.
But before we get into such a triggering issue for some, I really, really need to lay down some ground rules and some disclaimers first for a video like this. First and foremost, no political party is perfect. Neither of them reflect a perfect biblical worldview. We need to make that very, very clear, because some people may say, well, if you vote this way, then they're not perfect. And what about this? And what about that? Listen, neither party is perfect. Both parties are flawed.
Nobody ever said otherwise.
The second disclaimer is that neither person or neither candidate running for president is perfect. And for that reason, I know this is going to make some of you very, very angry, but I am not going to deal with the character of either candidate. Although that is a major issue, and that is something that needs to be taken into consideration. And the reason why is because I personally believe that when you vote, you're not just voting for one person. You're voting for potentially hundreds, maybe even thousands of people.
Yeah, all right. Okay. So you notice the circular logic with that? Okay, first of all, political parties. No party is perfect. Well, nobody ever said anything about having a perfect political party. Nobody. That's never been an aspect of it. No party is perfect. And then character doesn't matter, because you're not just voting for one person. You're voting for the party. So now we've looped back to number one. Circular logic here. Let's come back, circle back up there. So you're not voting for a person, so forget about the character stuff. He goes, now I know that's important, but we're not going to talk about that here, and I'm not taking that into consideration when I talk about it. Well, if it's important, then why wouldn't you talk about it? You need to do something better than just point back to the party. Trust the party. It's just amazing to me. It's kind of what you hear from people all the time. Well, you know, I don't like abortion. Abortion needs to be stopped. But, you know, in a perfect world, we wouldn't have any abortion. But since we don't live in a perfect world, people are going to have abortion. I just want to make it rare and safe. And now they want to worship it, right? Or they say the same thing. I really love the Second Amendment. Second Amendment is great, but we got to take your guns. Character is wonderful, but it doesn't matter. It's really important, but character doesn't matter. Look, perfection is not the issue. Here's what the issue is. The issue is principle. The issue is policy. The issue is prevarication. Let's just make three P's out of it, right? Isn't that easy to remember? PPP, Payroll Protection Plan, or the private public partnership. Well, we got another PPP, principle, policy, and prevarication. If you don't have principles, you're not going to have the right policies. And if you're going to prevaricate about this stuff, we can't believe anything you say about your policy either, can we? Right? If you're going to lie to me about everything because you got no character like Trump and Lala, these people are all over the place, both of them. Two of the biggest chameleons and liars I've ever seen in my life. And I've been watching politics a long time. They lie about everything. And so what difference does it make what their policies are? The rest of his video is irrelevant, because now he's going to fine tune. Well, you know, this one's a little bit better than that. No, if you're going to discount character, then you got nothing to stand on. You have nothing, no reason to believe anything that they say about anything. So Gateway Pundit says, for PAR, supporting a pro-abortion candidate should be a moral deal breaker for Christians. Well, again, we could argue about which one supports abortion more and which one has a more dangerous approach. But still, how did we stop abortion? How did we stop abortion? We stopped it locally, didn't we? This is why this is the only strategy that's ever worked. And this is why it was so important for Dobbs to come in and say, we're not going to determine this at the national level. And then immediately you've got a lot of national abortion, a lot of pro-life groups, as well as pro-abortion groups that want to bring it back nationally. Okay, so the Supreme Court's not going to do it. So let's let Congress and the president bring it back to the federal government. No, we actually saved lives by making it at the state level. And again, you know, some of the people say, well, okay, the number of abortions went from 60,000 in Tennessee and Texas to less than 50 in 1 year. So is that a win? I think so. Now, they will say, we've actually, some of these places will say, well, actually, there's more total abortions that have happened this year because, you know, people are going to other places to have it done. Actually, more of it is being done by the abortion pill, which is being made readily available. There is something that the federal government could do about that. As long as they got the FDA around, as long as they got the post office around, there's something they could do about that. And that really would help women's health, because letting them just be able to do this without seeing a doctor who is going to look at the size of the baby and other aspects, that presents a real threat to the mother's health. So they're not worried about women's health if they're going to let them take the abortion pill without a medical exam. So there are things like that that could be done. But look, that's primarily local. And that's how we've had success. And that was going to be the approach when Roe v. Wade came out. You had a lot of, after Roe v. Wade was done in 1973, you had a lot of conservatives say, this is a violation of the 10th Amendment. And it was. And that's eventually what, I said that all through this, that, you know, 10th Amendment nullifies Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade is not the law of the land. The 10th Amendment is. Finally, in the Dobbs decision, the Supreme Court said the 10th Amendment doesn't allow us to do this. But the Constitution was on the side of stopping Roe v. Wade from the very beginning. And there was already a movement to do that after the Supreme Court decision in 1973. And they were putting that, that was building momentum. And then the moral majority got behind Ronald Reagan and said, we're going to do it with Ronald. He'll pack the Supreme Court and they'll undo Roe v. Wade, rather than having a nullification fight. In other words, the people who wanted marijuana, medical and recreational, put up more of a fight than the Christians who said they wanted to protect babies from abortion. They were willing to have that fight. They were willing to nullify it at the state level. But the conservatives weren't willing to do that for the babies. Let's take the easy way. We'll put Reagan in and he'll appoint Supreme Court justices like Sandra Day O'Connor, who went the other way, or the others that he put in there. And so they thought that Reagan was God and he's going to give them everything that they want, rather than doing the hard work themselves and protecting babies by nullifying this federal overreach at the state level. That's the way we protect our families. That's the way we protect life. That's what they don't want you doing. They want you focused on national politics. And so he's got a table here. See if you can pull this up, Travis. This is the Gateway Pundit. And this is what Alan Parr put up. So he's got Democrat and Republican, national party politics. And he's got these things there. Redefining the family, transitioning kids, religious freedom, abortion, school choice, judges, moral issues, and so forth, right? And so, look, it's really clear. You got to vote Republican all the way down the line. Well, let's make it a little bit more interesting. Let's put in some issues like lockdown. Let's put in medical murder and martial law, but murder through the ventilators and the vaccines. Well, I don't see a difference between the two parties on those two things. Do you? I see on these vital issues like lockdown, medical martial law, medical bioweapon murder, or murder by ventilator, I see that they're both for that. Wars, what about wars? I see they're both for wars. How about violating the Constitution? How about civil asset forfeiture? How about, these types of things that violate, surveilling us, the TSA, all the rest of these things, are both of them on that side? How about debt slavery? I think Republicans and Democrats are in the same position. How about Mark of the Beast, CBDC? Well, you've got some Republicans who have taken the side of cryptocurrency, but they don't really, I don't trust them on Mark of the Beast either. And so when it comes to some of these other issues, so on those issues, I think those are pretty vital. We're talking about mass murder and depopulation. When you're talking about locking us down and enslaving us, when you're talking about violating the Constitution that they swore to uphold, I think those are some pretty important issues. When you talk about debt slavery by adding trillions of dollars a year, conditioning people for universal basic income, I think those are pretty big issues. And there's no difference between the feds on that and the two different parties. But when it comes out to the definition of a family, let me ask you this. Do you want the family defined by some politicians in Washington? No, I'm sorry. I don't think the Republican Party is up to that. I don't think they should be defining marriage, and I don't think they should be defining the family. And we don't need to have their permission to reject the pronouns. We don't need to have their permission to stop the mutilation of minors. We don't need to have their permission to stop gender gaslighting. It isn't going to happen, by the way, if we trust it to Washington to get done. If we want the National Republican Party to do that, to save the family for us, guess what? Family's going to be lost, like all the other things that we entrusted to the National Republican Party. The transitioning of children, the redefining of the family. How about religious freedom? What have the Republicans done for you lately when it comes to censorship and other things like that? Zero, zip, nada. They did nothing at all. When we go back to 2018, where they started mass purges on social media, did they do anything? No, they didn't do anything about that. And then when it comes to abortion, I already talked about that. When we really stopped abortion, we stopped it in the states. Now, we're still doing it in New York and California and other places like that. You're going to stop them with a federal law? No, because you don't have the constitutional authority to stop them. It's just like drug prohibition. I don't like drug prohibition. I don't like the murder of babies, but these are state issues. And if you're not, if the state government wants people taking drugs and murdering babies, they will stand in the way because the federal government is not, the purpose of the federal government is not to do law enforcement. And when they do that, they do it really poorly. When it comes to school choice, what does that mean? Does that mean the government subsidizing private schools? What about judges? How has that worked out for you? And then again, moral issues. Why in the world would anybody listen to some YouTuber who has a massive audience? Why? Because Google approves of what he says? And what he says is that the Republicans are going to define moral issues for you. See, I don't have my moral issues defined for me by any political party or any politician. They're defined in the Bible. And so if you want to do something about this, you have to fight this locally. All politics is local. And you have to fight it in your own family, because the movies and the media and the schools and everything are going to be fighting against your family, trying to capture them everywhere. That's where your fight is, folks. We don't wrestle against Democrats or Republicans. We wrestle against principalities and powers. And we have to take these thoughts captive here. You know, it truly is amazing. It's what about your character, right? The character of the politicians doesn't matter, he says. But what about your character? What's your character based on? Michael Brown says, can a vote for Trump be morally justified? He says, in my 2020 book, he said evangelical is called Evangelicals of the Crossroads. Will we pass the Trump test? He said, I devoted an entire chapter to the question, does character still count? Does morality still matter? Well, this guy thinks that character doesn't count and that the National Republican Party can fix our morality. This previous guy, I even forgot his name now. He says, back in 1998, in response, this is Michael Brown now, back in 1998, in response to the candidacy of Bill Clinton, the Southern Baptist Convention drafted a resolution in which it was stated clearly that, quote, moral character matters to God and should matter to all citizens, especially God's people, when choosing public leaders. They said that when the Democrat Bill Clinton was running, with his obvious moral failings, with a long list of women that Hillary Clinton called bimbos, who had alleged violent sexual misconduct and rape against Bill Clinton. And again, at the time, I saw liberals just say, that doesn't matter. It's like, really? You're supposed to be a defender of women? You say that women's rights matter and you just don't care about this kind of stuff? And the conservatives and the Southern Baptists were saying, tisk, tisk, look at the character that they are. And now it's been turned, hasn't it? And now we see the conservatives and many Southern Baptist leaders supporting Trump. a fellow party member of the Clintons and the Epstein. The resolution urged at the time, urged all Americans to embrace and act on the conviction that character does count in public office, and to elect officials and candidates who, although imperfect, demonstrate consistent honesty, moral purity, and the highest character. And so Michael Brown says, so how do we reconcile this with our support for Trump? And I write this as a two-time voter for Trump. He says, does he, although imperfect, demonstrate consistent honesty, moral purity, and the highest character? That's laughable. And he writes, hardly. So how then can we justify our vote for him? That's why all these conservative Christians are twisting themselves into pretzels trying to explain how you can support that. He said, many have answered, we're electing a president, not a pastor or a priest. We're voting for a commander-in-chief, not a spiritual leader. I've heard the argument, well, we're voting for, if I got a plumber out there, I don't ask him if he's faithful to his wife or any of this other kind of stuff. It's like, okay, but if this guy is a, if he is a bona fide criminal, how do you know that he even fixed what you paid him to do, or that he did it and he didn't do shortcuts and things that are going to blow up after he leaves or whatever? I mean, come on. Character matters for anything. But is this how we felt in the days before Trump? Did we use this same reasoning when Clinton was running for president? Weren't we saying that character counted, morality mattered, and haven't we been known as values voters? What values would those be? Didn't we once call ourselves the moral majority, he says. The Southern Baptist Convention resolution stated, quote, tolerance of serious wrong by leaders, such as depopulation shots, medical martial law, destroying businesses, destroying jobs, destroying people's lives, killing them, disabling them. Is that something that is a wrong? I mean, we're not even talking about what's going on with Bill Clinton behind closed doors with women. We're talking about what Trump did out front to everybody. He put a kill shot around the world. How is that not character? Who paid him off? Do you care? No, you don't even care about the crime, let alone investigating it. So he says, they said at the time that tolerance of serious wrong by leaders sears the conscience of the culture. It spawns unrestrained immorality and lawlessness in society, and it will surely result in God's judgment. Do we still believe that today? Or have we got our consciences, have they become totally seared by Trump? I think they have, quite frankly. That's a rhetorical question for Michael Brown. It's not, I'm telling you, it's true. The resolution also affirmed, quote, the moral character matters to God and should matter to all citizens, especially God's people, when choosing public leaders, unquote. But today, when concerned Christians point to Trump's questionable morality, they're called legalists. They're called short-sighted. They're called religious. They're called, as I was called just 2 days ago, you're one of these purity guys. You are just so narrowly focused, you can't see what's important. That's why we have the kind of country we have today. No moral convictions. Everybody's playing this 4D chess game that Alex Jones was alluding to. What a deception that is. The book of Proverbs warns us about the deadly power of the tongue, about the damage a fool can do through his or her words. Fool refers to somebody who's morally bankrupt rather than somebody who is intellectually challenged. The last thing a nation wants is a fool for president or king. That would be somebody who defies God. Why then would we vote for Trump? When pressed further on the issue, the answer would sound something like this. We still believe the character counts and morality matters, but things have become so extreme in America, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? This is, now he falls back, he lays out a thing, now he falls back into his Hegelian box. Well, here we are, we've only got two things that we can do. There's nothing I can do at the local level, there's nothing I can do as an individual or as a father or as a parent. We're just going to have to, the only fix that we got for our society is to vote for Trump or Lala Harris, so it's pretty clear, isn't it? Well, this is where you are, if you think like that. When politics becomes your religion. Robin Schumacher nailed it. Starts with a quote from C.S. Lewis. He says, C.S. Lewis, in a book written over 80 years ago, The Screwtape Letters, talked about the dangers of letting politics become your religion. Lewis put the following words in the mouth of his professional devil uncle, who was instructing a nephew on how to wreck his human target. He said, let your patient begin by treating patriotism or pacifism as part of his religion. Then let him, under the influence of partisan spirit, come to regard it as the most important part. Then quietly and gradually nurse him on to the stage at which the religion becomes merely a part of the cause, in which Christianity is valued chiefly because of the excellent arguments that it can produce. This is where we are with so many of the people who talk about Christian nationalism, with the Reawaken America people, with people like Michael Flynn, many of these other people, even Richard Dawkins is there. Well, you know why? I don't like Islam in the UK, so I really like some of the fruit of Christianity. I just don't like the tree. So let's cut down the trees and keep the fruit. How long will that last? And our society, the moral aspects of our society have become like a cut flower. And it's been in the vase long enough that all the petals are falling off now. We can all pretty much see that it's dead, can't we? Too many professing Christians on both sides of the political aisle seem to be convinced that they're in the midst of a human life and death, global existential battle. And if the other side, God forbid, wins, the result will be certain cataclysmic destruction on a national level. Sovereignty of God be darned, he says. Put it nicely. From MAGA and conservative disciples on the right to liberal social justice warriors on the left, there's no denying that shrieking, quasi-religious political activism is everywhere. Cultural commentators debate on why it seems to be so severe and growing. Some say the ideological social media news echo chambers have cordoned us off into warring factions. That is true. That's what I was talking about earlier. Or there others point to a growing spiritual emptiness inside of people that they then try to feed with politics. That is also true. You can feed it with politics, the power side of things. Yeah, power can be... You can make an idol out of power even if you don't have it, just like you can make an idol out of money even if you don't have it. You can make an idol out of sex if you don't have it either, right? Or you can indulge yourself in any and all of those things and make idols out of them. To them, political conventions can have an identical vibe to a raucous and joyous church worship. A candidate's inspiring speech warms the heart just like a fiery evangelist's, and they dole out the funds to the political campaigns, like they drop the money into the bucket of the church. Yeah, I just saw a thing from a mega church pastor, and his whole thing was, don't criticize these churches of 40, 50,000 people. You know? If you do, if you ever go to a concert, if you ever go to a football game or anything, well, then you're just a hypocrite because you're going to these big things, these big events anyway. And it's like, well, wait a minute. I don't go to a concert, a live concert, thinking that I'm going to have a relationship with the other people in the audience. I've got a one-to-one relationship with this performance up on the front. Are you saying that's what you're doing at the mega church? Because I'm saying that's what you're doing. Same thing is true of the football thing. I don't go to a football game thinking I'm going to get on the field participating. And yet, it is a spectator sport when we go to these mega churches, to most of the churches. Most of them, you're not actually a participant in it. So, again, the best experiences I've ever had have been a neighborhood Bible study that we'd meet in the house. That was the best that we had. That was not a mega church experience. It was not a mega concert experience. It was not a political event. It wasn't a MAGA political rally either. Whether religious or political sectarianism is about two hostile identity groups who not only clash over policy and ideology, but who see the other side as alien and immoral, writes Nate Cohn of the New York Times, it's still the antagonistic feelings between the groups more than the differences over ideas that drive sectarian conflict. See, this is the path to civil war. We get to the point where it's more important for us to own the other people than for us to try to fix a problem. Even if we disagree on problems, we don't want to talk about the issues. We just want to own that other guy. We don't want to debate any issues. We want to shut down any debate, censor any debate. We want to own those other people. Two things have typically occurred inside a person when this type of thing happens. Number one, the primary object of deliverance from societal problems is the government, not the Creator. People are tired of waiting on God to make things right. Isn't that what I said at the beginning? So I said, I think this guy got it exactly. I agree with him anyway. Number two, Scripture has been discarded as absolute truth and moral authority. Even character doesn't count, as you heard that so-called Christian influencer. When cultural values clash with the Bible, the culture wins. When you add politics to your relationship with God, and that's a new Christian nationalism, you mix these two things together, guess what you wind up with? Politics. Listen to what historian Antonia Tripolitus had to say about the Roman world. He said, the general populace no longer placed its hope or faith on the ancient gods whom they believed could not alleviate their daily encounters with the vicissitudes of Hellenistic life. This is a period of general material and moral insecurity. Let's let this go. I'm almost finished with this. Okay, pause that for a second. The unsettling conditions of the time led people to long and to search for salvation. A release from the burdens of finitude, the misery and the failure of human life. People everywhere were keenly aware to every new message of hope and eagerly prospecting for a personal savior, someone who would bring salvation, deliverance, or protection from the vicissitudes of this life. He says, does that sound familiar? And so he said, ask yourself some questions about this. And that's why I wanted to extend this just briefly. Here's about five questions. Do I find myself witnessing more about Biden, Lala Harris, Donald Trump, etc., than I do about Jesus Christ? Do I feel the country is doomed more if the wrong people are elected versus if the nation rejects God and his truth? If the wrong people are elected, is that a bigger risk to your nation than if we turn our back on God? Do I view those opposing political side as enemies versus people to be listened to and won for Christ? Do I enjoy thinking about the defeat of my political opponents? Oh yeah, we got to collect the tears of those liberals and make them wail, and we got to own them and all the rest of the stuff. I am sick of that, frankly. I am so sick of that. When I imagine how God's higher purposes can be accomplished, do my thoughts immediately turn to political parties and to politicians? Are my political views, practically speaking, a key aspect of my identity? Do I think that God is on my side politically and opposed to those who disagree with me? If so, you may have already been captured by the enemy. Screwtape describes this to his disciples. He says, once you have made the world an end and faith as a means, you've almost won. And it makes very little difference what kind of worldly end your man is pursuing. Provided that meetings and pamphlets and policies and movements and causes and crusades matter more to him than prayers and sacraments and charity, well, then he is ours. Because the battle is spiritual. It's not political. You have a choice that you can make. And the ballot box doesn't matter. Not at the federal level. It does at the local level. And they don't want you to make a difference. Thank you for joining us. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation, They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.